It's Current State on 90.5 WKAR. Welcome back to our program. I'm Mark Bayshore. We're here three times every weekday on WKAR, 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. on 90.5 FM, and every day at noon on AM 870 WKAR. Opponents of a planned bus rapid transit line between Lansing and Okemos continue to press their case. Twice yesterday, Meridian Township business owners and residents had a chance to ask questions and vent concerns with officials from CATA, the Capital Area Transportation Authority, which is planning the line. CATA says studies show that the $133 million project will enable faster, safer travel down Michigan and Grand River Avenues and will stimulate economic development. But opponents continue to doubt the benefits of the federally and state-funded plan, which would create dedicated bus lanes and alter intersections and traffic patterns. Now, in a few days, we're going to hear from BRT supporters here on Current State. Today, we hear from two opponents. Brett Dreyfus is the Meridian Township Clerk. Welcome to Current State.
Thank you.
And Renee Corey is a longtime Meridian Township resident.
Yeah,
welcome,
thanks,
Renee.
Thanks for having us. Yes.
There were two public meetings yesterday in Meridian Township for CATA to hear from township residents and business owners. Between the two of you, you were at three of these meetings. Renee, you were at both, and
yes.
Brett, you were at one. Give us a flavor here. Describe what you heard and saw at yesterday's meeting, Brett.
Well, I had high hopes. I'm an optimist. I had high hopes that CATA was listening to the concerns expressed by literally hundreds of residents and business owners over the last 6 months regarding this this proposed project. And after attending the meeting, I was extremely disappointed. The main problem was that CATA knew many of the top questions that have been asked repeatedly, key issues about the benefits, potential benefits of having a center running, a BRT, about problems with no left turn, about the impact on businesses, about the impact that it might have on people with disabilities to have to cross Grand River. Many, many issues, about traffic congestion and left turns and U-turns. And none of those were actually addressed. We spent the majority of the meeting was spent trying to get people to vent their questions in the audience. There was an hour and a half available for the meeting, and an hour and 15 minutes was spent going around the audience and repeating questions that have been asked for 6 months. So one would think that CATA should have come there prepared, having carefully vetted and reviewed the questions that have been asked repeatedly, and then we'd have a discussion on the responses that CATA has.
Renee, do you basically feel the same?
That's exactly it, and the second meeting went no better.
What? Let's be as specific as we can. What questions are most important to you, Brett, that have yet to be answered?
Okay, this is a very complex issue, so there's been literally, you know, dozens and dozens of hours spent on this, so I'll be really brief and go through some key components here. I've been in this process, being a Meridian Township elected official since 2010. A series of charrettes, which are like public meetings, were convened in order to address congestion along the Grand River Corridor. So the main problem attempted to be solved is that the Grand River Corridor is the busiest, one of the busiest routes, travel routes, in the entire mid-Michigan region.
Right.
So the issue wasn't that we were looking to improve public transportation. The issue was, how do we improve traffic flow and improve safety along this 8-mile stretch of the Grand River Corridor? And what came along was a series of options, but everything narrowed down to the BRT as CATA basically took over this entire process. And in my opinion, it became a solution in search of a problem. CATA was looking for a way to find a way to get this grant money that was out there from the feds of $150 million or whatever number currently they were working with. And unfortunately, along the way, the BRT became the solution to the entire problem. But the BRT is not the solution for congestion. Through months and months of analysis, of hearing people talk, and of looking over the plan, which is always in a state of revision and never seems to be in any way concrete blueprints at all, what we've discovered is that there's huge gaping holes both in logic and in the design of this project.
Let's get to the design here, and Renee, I want to bring you into the conversation here. What design questions do you think pose problems that you are still waiting to hear answers to?
Well, actually, that question about design issues is a problem, because where we were supposed to be, we were led to believe that we were speaking about the BRT in general and what we didn't like about it or what needed to change. We were forced yesterday to stick to design issue questions, leading us all to believe what we've believed all along, which is going to happen, and they're placating us. But I'll tell you that one huge glaring issue that came up was, how are the ladder trucks, for example, fire trucks, going to be able to negotiate those U-turns with the radius that they have, that they need? And it looks as though they're not going to be able to. And you look, I don't know if you've ever traveled in Tampa, Florida, for example, but they have that kind of left turn, straight and wait and all this other stuff that they're proposing for us. And it's a debacle there.
CATA is saying that the design is only 30% done, and that there's plenty of time and room for design alterations to address design issues. How do you respond to that?
Well, I'll tell you this, that if they fixed everything on that design that they could, which we know they won't, that's not the biggest issue. Anytime you have citizens and businesses coming together for a common cause, you know there are multiple issues. And you know that that doesn't happen a lot. We have a lot of people in the senior community and the handicapped community that have serious issues about this entire project, too. So it smells in a variety of ways.
Well, are you suggesting the process went awry here at some point, Brett?
This is a bad plan that people then are doubling down on. And every time there's more information and more people concerned about it, the more they come off with insistence that that this isn't a complete plan. And in fact, they wind up hiring a PR firm for $800,000, again, to try to sell this project. Let me address some of the key concerns that we have. Is this going to solve congestion issues? No, it won't. In fact, there's a concern that this will increase congestion. By having a dedicated bus lane, it's going to make it more difficult, actually, for cars to traverse smoothly along Grand River. Traffic signalization is going to change, allowing the BRT to change signals. That's going to negatively affect, actually, traffic flow along Grand River. There's issues about ridership. There's a goal to increase ridership capacity. Actually, the BRT plan may do the exact opposite. By decreasing the number of bus stations, people with disabilities and elderly people and bus riders will have to walk further to get to bus stations, actually making it more difficult to board the bus. There's also difficulties with the changing driving routes. There's concerns that people are going to avoid Grand River due to the congestion and move into the neighborhoods, adjacent neighborhoods, to avoid traffic backups along Grand River.
And you haven't heard what has CATA said in response to these concerns, though. Are you saying these are unanswered questions?
Yes, I am, and I believe if you ask almost any Meridian resident or business owner that has been following this, no one is saying that CATA is trying very diligently to respond to this. In fact, what most people feel is that CATA is protecting their own interests, and that is causing people on the local level to feel that their voices aren't heard. I mean, I feel that local democracy is threatened when politicians and technocrats from top down refuse to listen to what the citizenry is really expressing grave concerns about.
Brett Dreyfuss is the Meridian Township clerk. Renee Corey is a longtime Meridian Township resident. We are talking about their opposition to a proposed bus rapid transit line, which would run between Lansing and Okemos. One of the recurring topics that I see coming up here is the fact that this process actually goes back years. And I know, Brett Dreyfuss, you've been involved in this and been aware of it for some number of years. But as is the case with a lot of projects, big, comprehensive projects like this, a lot of people don't learn about it until an awful lot later. I'm gathering that has created a real disconnect, a real issue here, because a lot of residents, a lot of business owners are playing catch up, and now they feel like something's already taken shape that they didn't know about or didn't have enough input on. Is that still an issue?
Well, it is. I'll tell you, there's a problem when private citizens and businesses come together and engage more people in asking what is the BRT than CATA ever did. CATA yet has millions, several millions put aside to advertise the BRT when it starts up, almost $10 million. So is it any reason, can you think of a reason why I've written letters to Lansing State Journal and The Pulse in opposition and have not gotten one printed? But if you do your due diligence in Google, you'll see that the pro people have gotten their letters printed. And so I submit to you that if they had put as much money and effort into the initial charrettes and reaching out to the public that they have done trying to hire second and third consultants and advertising money and that kind of thing, maybe they would have actually been effective.
A lot of people were involved in the charrette process, though, weren't they?
Compared to our publicity,
There were maybe 50, 60 people at various sessions, maybe more. But the thing is that people were led through a series of options. If a person says, I'm not sure I want ice cream, and then they come and the person who's a facilitator says, well, we do have chocolate, vanilla, and strawberry, what would you like? You may not even want ice cream, but those are your choices. And so many of the choices were led and guided. And I don't think people realize that CATA, behind the scenes, was guiding the options and the alternatives available to narrow it down to the preferred alternative that they could provide. So the real issue here, again, is things like no left turns. That's one of the biggest issues, the median, the construction of a median that will affect businesses very negatively, very potential problems for customers to get to businesses, and businesses have been along Grand River are very, very concerned about what this might mean to the economic prosperity of the region.
I have heard that there has been mention at some point in this process of stopping the BRT at Hagedorn Road. What do you know about that?
Well, I went to the emergency meeting at CATA a couple weeks ago, and that was one option that was thrown out there almost tongue-in-cheek. I almost felt like it was trying to punish Meridian Township because we didn't want it, but I don't know where they would even stop to turn around. There's no place. Part of the reason that they need Meridian Township is they need a place to turn around. And they don't have one if they stop at Hagedorn. So I want them out of Meridian Township. But the second meeting, especially, we heard from a lot of people in the Frandor area that are concerned because Frandor is being bypassed. And you know what that does? We were talking about designs. Think about it. That bus for the elderly and the blind now goes directly to no grocery store. Kroger's is totally cut out. And Myers, which they allege is going to have the turnaround, is to the furthest possible part of the parking lot that you can be. It's 9 times further than where the bus stop is right now for people who are trying to get in to get groceries. So effectively, we might as well just starve the disability community. And they're very upset about that.
Is there any feature of the BRT project that you like? Brett?
There are some things that are nice, but not at a price tag of $150 million and reconfiguring the entire bus route so that actually it will decrease ridership and potentially increase congestion. What I like is, yes, it's nice to have level boarding. It's nice to have fares paid in advance so that you can move more quickly. These are some nice features, but some of these features can actually be incorporated in the current way that the CATA bus line operates.
How do you think this will play out, Renee?
I'm optimistic. I think that they're absolutely going to try and do what they're going to do, and they don't give a rip about us. But you know what? I think power to the people, going back to the 70s, I believe that. And our numbers are growing. Hundreds of us. Hundreds of us.
Brett, how do you think this will play out?
From my perspective, I was just up for re-election, and I was in the primary election here a couple of weeks ago. I was subject to intense political pressure to conform, even by our state representative, by the Tri-County Regional Planning Commission. Many negative things were said to me directly about Meridian Township citizens privately to try to get me to sort of come around and understand things. They also engaged in a smear campaign against me, which unfortunately for them did not work. I was actually renominated for my position because the citizens, including a lot of the anti-BRT people, recognized that our local democracy is threatened when powerful interests from above literally say, hey, this is the way it's going to be, and if you don't play ball with us, we're going to actually even engage in a smear campaign to get you out of office. That's pretty low-ball efforts there to try to affect change. So I'm confident because of the fact that the people supported me and saw through this negativity city, I'm very confident that we can actually stop this or at least modify it so that we can have something that works for us in Meridian Township.
Taking all of the Meridian Township population into consideration, do you think there is more support or more opposition to BRT?
Without question, I always have to run the numbers by. I mean, that's what I do. I mean, I have this gut. I've been involved in this for, you know, for 12 years in Meridian Township. I would say if you're going to ask me the numbers, at least 75-25, 75% are opposed to the BRT in Meridian Township.
I agree.
Well, that's your take as
mm-hmm.
well. I want to hear, we'll hear from a proponent or two of the bus rapid transit plan here in just a couple of days. Does an atmosphere exist right now in which the concerns at least can be discussed?
I think that we, the citizens feel and the business owners feel somewhat discouraged because just like the meeting yesterday, it seems as if there's a lot of lip service or window dressing that's always happening with this project. And in fact, sometimes the people are actually, as I said, put down literally. And so when this thing happens over a long period of time, it sort of wears the resolve of individuals. And perhaps that's a strategy as well, is to keep wearing people down. But in fact, the opposite is happening. In this case, people's strength and decision that we are not going to accept this has increased. And so I think that there is an atmosphere of distrust that many of us are trying to overcome, but unfortunately CATA is not able to seem to do their part and able to give people the opportunity to feel like we're really on a level playing field.
Renee, I was struck by a comment you made in a previous conversation that you and I had. You told me that you love public transportation and you wanted to love this project. At what point did this project start to go
wrong?
Well,
you know, because I'm on one of the appointed boards at Meridian Township, the DDA, I knew about it about the same time Brett did, and I was concerned strictly for financial reasons. And so as finances got better, as our economy got better, I wanted to like it, and I saw more crap coming up and being thrown in. The original idea then actually became to fruition. And I was told that we had no choice. And I was told by our current treasurer that it was going to happen. And when I said, how's everybody going to pay for it? She said, they've never lost a millage. Well, quite frankly, I'm sick and tired of the millages. I'm sick and tired of having millages stacked on us. They get stacked on us one after the other. And people, it's kind of like if you ever had a magazine subscription, you get it for a year. And after 6 months, they start sending you things that, you know, it's going to run out because they want you to, you know, forget about when it's the same kind of thing with the millages. And I'll tell you, I'll do everything in my power to make sure CATA does not get another millage. And that's very upsetting to me because I've loved CATA for a very, very long time.
The BRT is a project with a good many moving parts and increasingly a good deal of emotion attached to the whole concept. We want to thank our guests. Renee Corey is a longtime Meridian Township resident. Brett Dreyfus is the Meridian Township clerk. They are both opposed to the BRT in Meridian Township. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah,
thank you very much. Thanks for having us.
Coming up on Current State, what began as a residential camp for troubled boys in Ingham County in 1962 is now a multi-purpose human services organization, which every year gives more than 8,000 people the resources they need to turn their lives around. For Neighbors in Action, we'll speak with the CEO of Highfields Incorporated, as well as a Highfields client involved in one of their programs. That's on the way. Spoken word music occupies the space between rhythm and blues and hip-hop. Fans say it can convey a mood and a message in ways that other genres can't. A new recording project unites the talents of Lansing musicians in a spoken word offering called Speak Life, the Spoken Word Collection, Volume 1. Scott Pohl talked with a couple of the artists involved, and one of them's been a Live Music Friday guest here on Current State.
That's right, Mark. Twyla Birdsong is a singer who represented Lansing at the International Blues Challenge in Memphis last January. I went to the festival and spent some time with Twyla and her band. Tyler Jensen played keyboards with her on that trip. Tyler Jensen organized this spoken word project, and Twyla Birdsong was there to help.
Tyler Jensen, welcome to Current State.
Thank you for having me.
I wanted to ask you what it is about spoken word music that attracts you.
I think it's just the general ease of it. It's the freedom of it. It's very free-flowing. It's not super structured, but it's not just completely loose. It's where it needs to be.
Tell me about the artists we hear on this project.
Pretty much all the artists on the project are local. They're people that I've worked with in the past and just kind of asked if they just do it, and they said yes, without any pay, thankfully. So very talented people, very great people. I can't even complain. I'm very happy with the project and what they did.
Well, let's go over them one by one a little bit, at least the ones who, as I understand it, are speaking on the recording, okay? Tell me about Kami.
Kami, I originally met at a gig, and she knew the person I was playing with. Just kind of talked to her afterwards, and she mentioned that she did quite a few things, and one of those was spoken word, and I happened to have a piece of music probably like maybe even the next year, and just hit her up and see if she was willing to do it, and she said yes.
In every way, I am unique. Not that kind of, ooh, she's a, no. Not that word that we like to geek or freak or fake or play. Like it's not that way to some in the world of many who easily want to be the same. I am unique.
And Maya Dillard.
Maya Dillard was recommended to me by a friend. And ended up meeting with her at Panera Bread, and she said she was down to do it, and first time recording her and listening to her, she was, wow. I was in for a surprise.
When the symphony of life reverberates through the concert hall of your mind, every seat assigned, every ticket sold, overwhelmed by what's happening, when you have reached capacity, behold the baseline. When the energy within you, after everything you've been through, begins to crescendo, behold the baseline.
Who's Miles Young?
Miles Young is a guy out of Jackson. He stays here in Lansing, Michigan, and happened to have done a show with him in the past. It was great chemistry. We just kept up with each other, and I've done some stuff for him. He's done some stuff for me, and we're just good friends.
He's the only male voice we hear on the recording.
Yes, he is. Yep. Yeah.
They say we should talk about it. Talk about this, talk about that. Well, maybe we should. My perspective. Living life, I've noticed most people have a tendency to try their hardest to remain consistent in the terms of their personality. Most people want to be known for either things they feel are cool or awkwardly accepted. Though I see no real harm in this, I have sort of a different approach. Yeah, I believe it's healthy to reinvent yourself through the pivotal phases in your life.
All right, now the other female voice our listeners are familiar with, Twyla Birdsong, has been on Current State. She's performed on a Live Music Friday with us.
Nice.
People are used to hearing her sing the blues. Mm-hmm. Tell me about getting her involved in a spoken word project.
Well, I just asked her, and she said she had never done it before, but I felt like she could do it just because her tone of voice. Like, I know she had never done it before, but like hearing her tone of voice and like hearing her talk and like rehearsals and stuff, I'm like, I think she could honestly pull it off, and she did.
When I feel that no one cares, when I've reached out so many times and no one's there, when I've lost all hope, when I've given all I had to give, just to realize my efforts had no return to you.
Twyla Birdsong, tell me what inspired this particular song.
This song, I had been sitting on for a while. I wrote it few years ago. The name of it was Borrow Some Hope. And I had given it to a couple of musicians and never heard anything back to try and get some melody for it. But when Tyler, he contacted me, wanted me to be part of this project, and I was trying to think of something to write for. And pretty much last minute, I was like, well, let me grab these lyrics. And I took it with me to the studio and kind of like just rearranged some things and just went into the studio, and it worked out really well.
People who've seen the Twyla Birdsong band are familiar with you doing, I'd use the word standards, songs mm-hmm. that they're familiar with, mm-hmm. may not be aware that you do some songwriting. Do you mm-hmm. do a lot of songwriting?
I do. I consider myself really good at lyrics and pretty much poetry. I've done that all my life. But as far as songwriting, I do struggle with that because it's a certain standard for it, and I'm not school learned with it. So I struggle with that. But as far as words, I like to talk. I like to put some words together, and I do like to write. I enjoy writing.
It makes me curious about what you might be thinking when you say yes to a project like this, because your mm-hmm. fans are used to hearing you. You're a blues shouter, and people mm-hmm. really like that about mm-hmm. you and your band. This is a different side of Twyla Birdsong. Mm-hmm. Are you hoping that will send a new message to your fans and maybe bring some new fans into mm-hmm. checking out your blues work?
Intentionally, I didn't do it consciously to do that, but I definitely say yes to it because I'm open to new projects. I'm open to stretching myself. And I don't consider myself really a blues artist because my background really is gospel. And then many people don't know this about me, but I was about 5 years in orchestra. So I have that classical feel also. But I love music.
I can't help but think that it might draw in some younger listeners now, too.
Yeah, I think so. Like my daughter, I let her listen to it, and of course they love that. It's like that neo soul kind of vibe, and I love it because I grew up listening to a wide range of music. Country, I love some country, so don't be surprised if you hear me do some country later on. But yeah,
Twyla Birdsong, I love this song. Thanks.
Thank you.
We're talking with Lansing musician Tyler Jensen. His new recording project is called Speak Life: The Spoken Word Collection, Volume 1. When we listen to these spoken word recordings, who wrote these words? Were each of these individuals involved in writing these words? Were they ad-libbed? How did that play out?
100%. Like, I sent them the music and told them to talk about whatever you want to talk about. Like, I just wanted to be uplifting. I wanted to be encouraging. And they just delivered. But yeah, I just told them, write what you feel. And I feel like it'll be great. I had confidence in them.
Is spoken word popular in Lansing in terms of recordings, maybe live performance too? How much of an audience do you think there is for spoken word here?
Well, the thing is with spoken word in Lansing, in my opinion, I think there's like a serious audience for it yet. There just isn't really an outlet yet. Like there's artists out there, there's venues to do it at. It's just like not official. Nobody's really pushed it to like make it happen.
All right, now you called this project Speak Life, the Spoken Word Collection, Volume 1. That seems to indicate that you're planning to keep doing this. There will be Volume 2, Volume 3, Volume 4.
Yeah, hopefully in the future. I don't want to, you know, guarantee it or anything like that. You never know where life's going to take you, but I'd definitely be down to do it in the future, and I think the people on the project would be too.
How can people hearing this find this recording?
It's on tylerjensen.bandcamp.com.
Let's make sure they spell Jensen right. It's J-E-N-S-O-N.
S-O-N,
right?
Yeah.
And we'll link to it at WKAR.org.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yep.
We've been talking with Lansing musician Tyler Jensen. His new recording project is called Speak Life, the Spoken Word Collection, Volume 1. Thanks, Tyler.
Thank you for having me.
Good luck with the project.
All right. Thank you.
For Current State, I'm Scott Pohl.
Understanding me, I can understand.
And coming up on Current State, wildlife lovers here in mid-Michigan don't have to drive to the UP to spot a moose. Current State's Peter Wharf talks with the Potter Park Zoo's education curator Dennis Laidler about its new moose exhibit. That and more coming up after the break on Current State. Current State on 90.5 WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. Highfields Incorporated is a nonprofit organization serving children, youth, and families in Lansing, Onondaga, Livingston, Jackson, and Hillsdale counties. Its mission is to provide opportunities for those it serves to become more responsible for their own lives and to strengthen their relationships with others. Joining us in the studio today for our weekly Neighbors in Action segment, Highfield CEO and President Brian Filson. Welcome, Brian.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Mark.
And joining us also, Kelly Bonadrini. Kelly and her family are participants in one of Highfield's counseling programs. Welcome, Kelly.
Thank you.
Brian, Highfields is probably best known for its residential treatment component, but there's more to what you do. You've got 12 different community service programs, for example. Is there a common goal among all these programs?
Yeah, you know, since our inception in 1962, our goal has been to help children and families and to restore them and to strengthen them. And we wanted to do it and meet them at the earliest point of need. And so we created a number of programs early on in their needs so that they wouldn't have to have children taken out of the home. And so so family restoration and strengthening the families is a real key component.
The wraparound program is the one that Kelly and her family have been involved with. What is wraparound?
Yeah, wraparound is a program that originally is in the behavioral health arena. So we help children and we bring all the services together and then we wrap around the child so that all of the different services can coordinate together. So it's not just one particular program that's helping. It's a number of different programs, and then Highfields helps coordinate those services, and then we are the wraparound coordinators.
Kelly, about a year ago, you and your husband adopted two sisters who had been in foster care. How did that situation lead you to the wraparound program?
We both had the kids come into our home as foster care children at the start about a year ago. We were recommended by Community Mental Health to get this waiver called an SED waiver for the wraparound service early into having the children. The wraparound did not begin until December, end of December, beginning of January, when it finally went through the court system that we were able to get all the paperwork done. So it's through an SED waiver, which is a severe emotional disturbance waiver.
Okay, so they face particular emotional challenges.
Yes, they had severe PTSD and they needed more. My older daughter in particular needed more than just the therapy. So they offered this service as part of the waiver that we could get.
And what are your daughter's ages?
Our oldest daughter is 8. Her younger sister is 7.
And how long were they in foster care before you adopted them?
5 to 5.5 years. A long time.
Oh, my. In a young life there. Brian, how do most families find you, and are they usually referred like Kelly was? Or?
Yeah, most of our programs are contracts that we have with local and state entities. So Michigan Department of Health and Human Services, Community Mental Health, which is where Kelly's referral came to us. So we have these contracts and these programs, and as families come into contact with the larger systems, they refer to Highfields, and then Highfields assigns a worker, and then we do some intervention with them.
Kelly, can you talk to us about how wraparound has at least started to help your family?
It has helped our family very much. Highfields is an organization that I don't know that we could have made it through the last 6 months, 7 months of our time going through the adoption, et cetera. Erica Phillips is our wraparound worker, and she has come in and helped us get an IEP through the school system. She has given me...
Explain what that is.
It's an individual education plan that is done through the schools.
I see.
To help the child.
Customize the education for the needs of your
daughter. Absolutely. Okay. And ours was for behavior. And since she received this wraparound service, Erica has helped us get into most recently a camp called Sierra Rose Healing Hearts with Horses Camp that they just went to last week. And these are things we didn't know existed.
Are you seeing your daughters change?
Yes, very much so.
What are you seeing?
Much calmer. They are feeling more confident in themselves. Mm. There is less.
And this is just since December, correct?
This is just in the past year,
okay.
to be honest with
okay.
you. But wraparound has helped get us through paperwork with health insurance, you know, things I've never seen before. They are my greatest resource to help me get through some of these things and helping out with camp and parents groups, you know, where we can go and, you know, meet with other parents that are going through the exact same things that we're going through.
Mm. I'm speaking with Kelly Bonadrini, whose family's involved with the wraparound program at Highfields, and with Brian Filson, CEO and president of Highfields. What kind of advice have, I mean, you've got, I'm sorry, are both of your daughters diagnosed with PTSD?
Both of them are. Yeah. Our oldest daughter has the wraparound service. Oh, she was recommended
I see.
For the wraparound service. But they also help with our younger daughter, who also has gone through so much.
Sounds like the horse camp has really resonated with both of them?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They couldn't wait to go. They loved being a part of it. It helps them to, animals help to calm them down, get them to open up about things that they may not open up about. And so putting them in this and having Highfields recommend this to us and help us get into this camp has been a huge success.
Open up about positive things or about their past.
About past hurts. And
really?
Yes.
Okay.
You would be amazed at what animals can do and some of the things that the girls will talk about. After, you know, being around the horses.
After a positive encounter with an animal. How about that? Brian, education's another component of what Highfields does. Tell us about your education programs.
Yeah. Besides the community service, we have a division that's educational. We have a number of Reaching Higher programs where we work with elementary and middle schools throughout the Lansing area and Jackson area. And we help those kids you know, in after-school programs where they can, you know, meet all of their educational needs, get extra tutorial help. We increase parental engagement in the school districts. We decrease problems that the children have during the school day. And then all of those students...
How do you do that exactly? Give me an example of how you reduce the problems a kid has throughout the course of a school day.
We help the students become fully prepared. We help problem solve so that when difficulties do arrive with other students or with teachers or administrators, we were able to help them role play and learn how to handle and problem solve. How do they react to bullying behavior? How do they react to certain situations that may arrive? We also help them be fully prepared. So they get their homework done. We feed them dinner, and then we transport them home. And so it's a great opportunity for them to get individualized assistance and to help the parents who often are, you know, struggling and working jobs and trying to figure, you know, their own situations out. So, and then in addition to the Reaching Higher educational program, we have our Breakthrough, which is our low ropes adventure course on campus. We have a zip line. And so we have lots of groups that come out. We have great partnerships with school districts, corporations, team building activities. And then we work with the Ingham County Family Court to do the Ingham Academy and Evening Reporting. So our educational division is pretty robust and does a great job in a lot of different arenas.
Let's touch on the residential treatment program, of course, which has been around since Highfields was founded, 1962. These are for boys 11 through 17. Where are the facilities? And just broadly, describe what happens there.
Yeah, our residential program is housed in Onondaga at our 140-acre campus. And we have, you know, a number of young men that come to us throughout Michigan. They're assigned and usually brought to us via a court order. So those youth then spend anywhere from 30 to 60 days on the low end up to 6 to 7 months at the high end. They go to school on our campus. They live in a congregate foster care living arrangement in a very open, staff secure. And then we engage the entire family in their treatment. then we transition and support their reentry back home into the community.
We're running short on time here, but I did want to talk about funding because you do rely on donors to make up to contribute a lot of your funding. How can people support Highfields?
Well, they could come to our Strengthening Families Breakfast, which is October 27th at the Kellogg Center. Kelly is going to be one of our speakers there, and you're going to hear a little bit more about her story and a little bit about how we've helped her change lives.
You'll be telling a little bit more of your story with your two daughters,
I take it. Yes, I will.
Okay. What does everybody need to know about Highfields briefly, Kelly? What?
Highfields is a wonderful, wonderful organization, and we would have never known about it without the help of their partners in community. And I would encourage people to donate to it and more people to learn about it through their workers, their foster care, because I don't think very many people know about this, and they need to.
Been around a long time, but done an awful lot of important work. I think some number of people do realize the importance of the work that you do at Highfields. Brian, but we do want everybody to know what you're getting done over there. I've been speaking with Kelly Bonadrini, whose family's involved in the wraparound program at Highfields, and we want to thank Brian Filson, Highfields CEO and President. Kelly, Brian, thanks to both of you. Good luck.
Yeah, thank you.
Current State's looking for more nominations for our Neighbors in Action feature. Please help us out and email us your suggestions. currentstate@wkar.org. Put Neighbors in Action in the subject line or tweet us, please, @KARCurrentState, and tell us a little about why you think they should be featured for the great work they do. Well, while the mighty moose is native to a part of our state, it doesn't range as far south as mid-Michigan. But wildlife lovers now have a chance to see these magnificent creatures at Lansing's Potter Park Zoo. Its recently completed moose habitat has transformed a once quiet corner of the park into a facsimile of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Current State's Peter Wharf met up with the Potter Park Zoo's education curator, Dennis Laidler, for a lay of the land.
We're one of only 9 zoos, accredited zoos in the United States, that have moose on exhibit. And
where are some of the others?
Well, the two closest are the Columbus Zoo in Ohio and a zoo called the Northeast Wisconsin Zoo, or the New Zoo, in Green Bay. So it's about a full day's drive in any direction to go to another zoo that has moose. And they need space. They need a major water feature. And so when we were researching the things and whether we decided what and whether we'd even have moose, you know, you look at, do we have the right area? And it turns out this end of the zoo, because it's in the floodplain of the Red Cedar, already had a pond. It had a lot of mature vegetation. It had all the elements that were needed for the kind of space that we wanted to have.
What was the area before?
It was extra space, and then it was a waterfowl pond. And waterfowl pond is sort of a stretch. We just had 2 swans, disabled swans there. There are a lot of ducks and geese, but they were wild mallards and wild Canada geese that would just happen to use the pond. There are challenges. You know, first of all was working with state and federal agencies to bring in a member of the deer family, making sure there were moose available from a legitimate source. It's very, very rare for an accredited zoo to get an animal from the wild. For the last several decades, 98% or more of all of our animals at accredited zoos and aquariums come from other accredited zoos and aquariums. But remember, at the time, there were only 8 institutions that had moose, and only a couple of them were breeding and breeding successfully. And the best at doing that was the Minnesota Zoo, and we were working with them. But their prime producer of moose calves had a difficult pregnancy. She didn't survive, and neither did the calf. And so they were set back in their breeding program for a few years. And so we talked to the Michigan Department of Natural Resources, the state veterinarian, Michigan Department of Agriculture, and the big concern was chronic wasting disease, which unfortunately has showed up in Michigan regardless of their efforts. And sometimes you just can't control. But so they said, well, if it comes from, if we work with a state agency, state wildlife agency, based on our best information, there's two states that we would approve a moose coming from the wild, and that would be Idaho or Alaska. And Alaska has, unfortunately, because they have so many moose, they have moose car accidents, which if we think deer car accidents here in Michigan are bad, it's a lot worse.
They're twice as bad.
Yeah, or more.
Or
but,
more.
Yeah, and so unfortunately, they always have a few orphaned moose calves each year from moose car accidents. And they had a program where they work with the Alaska Zoo to house them and try to find a home for them. So I'm telling you this in a few minutes, but this took months of meetings and working out with all the potential partners.
Are you in competition with other zoos in some way?
No. In fact, it's just the opposite. Mm-hmm. There are many benefits of being accredited zoo. We could do a whole show on what accreditation means and why it's important. I'd be happy to do that sometime.
Let's do that.
To give you an idea, there are a little over 2,500 licensed USDA public animal entities in the United States, and about 230 or so are accredited by the Association of Zoos and Aquariums. And so it's more than just, do you take good care of the animals? There's a lot of other things. But one of the strengths of that is that we all share a resource. Like I said, not only did we talk to the other eight zoos that have moose, they shared all their best practices, all the things that they had happened that didn't work out well. They shared sort of videos. Our keepers talked to their keepers. So we weren't starting from scratch. We had the best available information from the most successful zoos at doing moose husbandry. So that makes a big difference. And so we were able to, and then of course is how do you get the moose here? Once, you know, assuming that we get the moose exhibit and all those things happen.
So looking at the photos over here that I give you some
program.
Idea of how, yeah, that, how moose get around.
Yeah, that was a different program back in the 80s, a really cool program to help jumpstart our recovering moose population in the UP.
Right. Looking at the moose lift by helicopter here and the moose on the sling.
But they didn't do that with the calves.
Right.
And I see the keepers out there, which means that the moose aren't out. So they're walking the perimeter of the exhibit.
Where might they be now?
They'll be in the barn or in there. They also have off-exhibit holding. So that's the nice thing about having a big space. We have not only a large exhibit. Next to the barn, there is another enclosure that allows us, one, to do things like walk the perimeter, fence, check for things. We do that very frequently.
This has got to be one of the largest areas in the zoo.
It is, by far. It's over 4 acres, and none of our other exhibits are close to that.
Can you describe what we're seeing right now?
Yeah. What we have here at the public viewing, and that was very important in designing this exhibit, that we have what we call unobstructed viewing, that you're not looking through a fence to see the animals. Now, when you have an animal that can clear an 8-foot fence and stands 6.5 feet at the shoulder, there's some challenges involved with that. So basically, it involves having the viewing area without any barriers, you know, at eye height. And the way you do that is it had to be excavated to a certain depth so that when the moose are up close, they're in the water. We added this waterfall not only just for aesthetics, but it also helps oxygenate the water and reduce algae growth. So most of these things have multiple functions. You know, one of the challenges when we first surveyed the area is moose being ruminants, you know, have a complicated digestive system. In the wild, they eat a lot of different types of vegetation, woody vegetation throughout the year, and in the summer, a lot of aquatic vegetation. But this is an urban area, so we have a lot of purposely introduced and accidentally introduced invasive species. And so we're very fortunate to have a strong relationship with multiple departments at Michigan State. Dr. Peter Carrington is a world-renowned toxic plant expert, and he helped us by doing surveys here. And we had to remove about 70% of the woody vegetation because it turned out to be a potential problem for the moose.
Education curator at the Potter Park Zoo, Dennis Laidler, thanks for that.
You're welcome.
For Current State, this is Peter Worf.
And that's our show for today. Coming up tomorrow, the framework of what will become the facility for rare isotope beams on the MSU campus continues to take shape. But what you see at street level is only part of the story. FRIB will house a massive underground tunnel where charged nuclear particles will collide at half the speed of light. This weekend, MSU shed some light on this gigantic project by hosting an open house. Current State's Kevin Lavery toured the site and will have a report tomorrow. Plus, cherry picking season may be over in Michigan, but a few weeks ago, one Michigan cherry farmer raised awareness about an issue that's still creating a buzz. Mark Santucci posted a picture to Facebook of all the tart cherries his farm forced to spoil, and it went viral. We'll talk with him about the picture and the whole story behind it. That and more tomorrow here on Current State. Don't forget, 2 weeks from tonight, it's our next Pop-Up Stories event. That's Wednesday, August 31st. Plan to join us at 6 p.m. at Red Cedar Spirits, Merritt Road, East Lansing. The theme is The Heat Is On. We're looking for more storytellers to sign up if you've got a story to tell around that theme. The Heat Is On. Email us at currentstate@wkar.org. They are fun events. Whether you tell a story or just sit back and listen, you can stay up to date on all of our upcoming events by liking our Facebook page at Pop-Up Stories Lansing. Peter Worf is our program's executive director. Kevin Lavery directed the show today. Thanks also to Scott Pohl, Katie Cook, Jamie Paisley, Brooke Allen, and Drew Hill. All of our content ends up on our Current State podcast, informative, insightful, indispensable, anywhere, anytime at iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. We hope you have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow. It's Current State on WKAR.